So let's first of all mention where we're going to start today officially, but I want to go back a little bit and review something that we did before. So what we're up to here is on Daf Lamed Zayin Omid Aleph, Shenemar Veloya Ason Anoshi Anesh.
Between the two sets of colons?
Right.
Okay.
That's about 10 lines up from the bottom of the Omid. Right. But just to go back to review a little bit of the earliest sugya, the Gemara on the top of this Omud on Daf Lamed Zayin Omid Aleph quotes a braisa with a twofold machlokes between Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Yossi. And both of these arguments address the status of a gioris. And the first machlokes between Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Yossi about gioris revolves around the law of dam. Of dam hametame betumas nida, because according to the Torah law, if a woman sees dam, then from the moment that she sees the dam, she becomes tmeya, which would mean in terms of taros, if she has any contact with food stuff that is tar, she's metame those taros from the moment that she sees dam. There's no din of what's called l'mafreya. That's already a rabbinic enactment. The Chachamim were afraid that even though she saw dam now, but the dam itself was metame earlier. Why? Because it was nekar min amokar. So let's say the dam gets held up in what's called the kosle beis harechem, and it takes a certain period of time. The maximum of which is 24 hours until that dam actually is freed, so to speak, and comes out of the body, and she sees it as a re'iyas dam. So the Chachamim said that even though the Torah is not going to go l'mafreya, which means that the Torah is going to say uki gavra chelskase, we're going to assume that she has a cheskas tara up until the moment that chazaka changes, which means the moment that she sees the dam. But the Rabbanan said we have to be choshesh and concern ourselves with the dam that was nekar min amaka, that was held up and didn't come out, for up to a maximum period of 24 hours. So the maximum period of time that the Chacham would set up this l'mafreya would be 24 hours. That's called me'es li'es, and that's the Rabbanan. So any taros that she had contact with during the 24 hour period before the re'iyas dam are considered tmeos midr abonon, based on this suspicion that maybe the dam was held up in her body before it came out.
Excuse me, does it matter whether it's dam nida or dam ziba?
I don't think it would make any difference. Again, you might have to define who's a zava and who's a nida. Anita is basically any re'iyas dam, whereas Zava would be three re'iyos on three consecutive occasions within a period of 11 days between one period of nidus and another. Mm-hmm. But as far as the tumah itself is concerned, they're both the same.
Okay, thank you.
Now, there's a way of cutting down this derabbanon and limiting it to a shorter period of time so that we don't have to go all the way back 24 full hours. And that's called mipkido lipkido. Because let's assume in the following scenario that she made a bedika, an internal inspection, within that 24 hour period of time. Let's say she made it 12 hours before she actually saw the re'iyah. So in that case, we're going to cut down the period of l'mafreya to 12 hours, because there's no way that there could have been dam 24 hours ago that was held up in the Beis HaRechem, because she made a bedika and an internal bedika, and there was no dam. So, but from that moment of the internal bedika and on, we have to be choshesh, we have to worry, according to this rabbinic enactment, about the possibility that the dam was held up literally a second after she made that last bedika until she saw the re'iyas dam. So it's either mipkido lipkido, which would be a short period of time, less than 24 hours, or if there was no bedika, which where she found herself to be tahora, then we're going to maximize out at 24 hours, which is called Me'es Li'es. All this, everything that I presented to you, is the shita of the Chachamim. This is the first Mishnah in Masechta Nida that the Chachamim have this halacha of Lemafreya. The Mishnah records another shita, which is that of Beit Shammai. And although, generally speaking, Beit Shammai are always machmir, in this case, Beit Shammai are the Gevaldige Mekilim, and they say that there is no din of Lemafre, even Drabbanan. They never accepted this gzera.
Wait, this brayta that starts, that's a brayta.
So I'm going to introduce the brayta in just a minute. I'm giving just a little bit of an introduction to this brayta to tell you that this brayta would make no sense according to Beit Shammai, because Beit Shammai, in fact, in the Mishnah at the beginning of the Nida, never accepted this gzera of Lemafreya. That's point number one. Mm-hmm. Now, point number two is Beis Hillel. Beis Hillel, which is not the Shita of the Chachamim, there are three Shitas all told, but Beis Hillel on the most Machmir Shita. And they say that there's only one halacha here called mipkida lepkida. There is no din of me'es le'es, meaning there's no such thing as a rabbinic enactment to be metame hataros for a 24-hour period. It all depends on halas pkida. Now what that means is, and here's where Beis Hillel are the most machmir, in the following scenario, where her last pkida was many, many days ago. And since Beis Hillel does not have this clamping, restricting 24-hour Me'es Le'es halacha, all he has is mipkida lepkida, we're going to have to assume that she may have had dam after the last pkida, which again, in terms of the biology of it, we have to analyze this, because it may mean that the dam is held up for quite a long period of time, even longer than 24 hours. This is all introduction to our shita. Our shita in this brisa is the shita's chachamim, and the chachamim have a double halacha here. On the one hand, they accepted the premise that the rabbanan enacted a lemafreya gzeira lemafreya to be metame all the taras that she had in contact with even earlier than the re'ias dam. However, they also introduced a restrictive principle called Me'es Le'es, meaning that the maximum amount of time that we would assume the dam was held up would be 24 hours. And if there's no pkida within the last 24 hours that would establish that she's tahora, then we're going to be metame lemafreya full 24 hours, but not earlier than 24 hours. Keep in mind, we don't accept Beis Hillel. Now all this is background to our brisa, which records a machlokas between Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Yossi regarding a gioris. What's the status of a gioris? After all, the tumah of dam nida is unique to a bas Yisrael who is endowed with kedushas Yisrael. So that if, let's say, for argument's sake, a minute after she was toveles, l'shem gerus, so she comes up from the mikvah, she's a gioris, and a minute later she sees dam, it's impossible to apply any sort of lemafreya here in this case to be metameo because of the dam that was held up in the Beis HaRechem, in the Kosei Beis HaRechem, because at that moment in time she was a non-Jewish woman. She was a goyita, and as a goyita, it's not metame. So the lechora, the maximum number amount of time that we can be metameyar would be from the moment of gerus. Now, let's say we have the following: we have the moment of gerus itself. We'll call it time T1, and then a few hours later, we'll call it time T2. She sees dam. Would she be tmeya from Me'es Le'es? Absolutely not. That's impossible, because that would go back to 24 hours, a period of time when she was not a gioris. So that's for sure out of the question. Would she be metame from the moment of gerus, which we call time T1, or should be metame from time T2, the moment in which she saw the dam? And here's the machlokas between Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Yossi Aglili. Rabbi Yehuda is going to say Daya Shaita. Rabbi Yehuda is going to say that this situation of a Gyores flukes up the whole system. What do I mean by flukes up the whole system? Since it's impossible from the time of Geiris to go Lemafreya to the period of time before the Geiris, therefore the whole Gzera was completely dropped. It was completely left out in the case of Gioris. Hence, according to Rabbi Yehuda, she only becomes Tmeya from the moment that she sees the Dam. That's called Daya Shaita. And Rabbi Yossi says, wait a minute, I agree with you that we can't accept the entire Gzera, lock, stock, and barrel, and go a full 24 hours of Meisli Ace back to the time that precedes her Geiris. That's impossible. But we could go back to the time, to the moment of her Geiris. Now, her Geiris is, we call the time T1. Now she sees Dam X amount of hours later, that's time T2. We're going to apply L'mafreya. It's not going to be a L'mafreya in the full sense, because we cannot go back 24 hours. There were only X number of hours, a short period of time, since her Geiris, so we can't go beyond that, before that time. But nevertheless, we'll still apply what we call B'toras Me'es Li'es. Now, where do I get this phrase of B'toras Me'es Li'es? Did Berzon create this? No, I stole it from Tosus. And Tosus is here, Dibra Maskel Rav Yehuda. And if you look at the last full line in that Tosus, Ela Klomar B'toras Me'es Li'es. What we mean by B'toras Me'es Li'es is that this takana of L'mafreya applies even to the case of a Gioris, according to Rav Yossi. But obviously, it's not going to be a full Me'es Li'es. We cannot possibly go back a full Me'es Li'es to the time when she was a Goya. But from the time of Geiris and on, assuming that she saw Dam within a 24-hour period, or we may not go all the way back to the moment of her Geiris. If let's say she did a Bedika subsequent to the Geiris. And we're going to apply the Gzera within a limited or a fragmented method to the case of Gioris as well. Okay then? So again, the Gioris, once she sees Dam, she could be Metame L'mafreya back to Pekida, or back to, so to speak, Me'es Li'es, meaning the earliest time, which would be in this case the moment of the Gioris itself. That's the first machlokas between Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Yossi. Now we have a second machlokas between Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Yossi, and that's about a principle called Hamtana. Hamtana means that we always have to determine who is the father of the child. So if a woman was impregnated, and then she, let's say she got divorced, and now she wants to get remarried, we don't know. Let's say she'll get pregnant from the first bia after she gets married. We don't know. Maybe she was already pregnant from her first husband, her previous husband. This issue of lahavchin bein zeros that becomes very, very sharp or very profound in the case of a gioris, because now we have to be mavchin bein zera kodesh lebein zera posel. If she was pregnant at the time of the geirus, and we may not see that, then the child is born to a non-Jewish father, let's assume. If, on the other hand, she was not pregnant at the time of the Geirus, then we can assume she got married, let's say, the very day that she converted, then the child would be the child of the Jewish father who married her after the Geirus. So in order to establish who is the father of this child, we want to make sure that when she gets married, this Gioris, she's not pregnant. How do we establish for sure that she's not pregnant? We wait a 3-month period of time from the moment of Geiris, and therefore it's impossible when she got married 3 months after the Geiris that she's pregnant, because otherwise, hukar ha'ubar, she would be what we call in English showing, if you follow that phrase. Yeah?
Yeah.
Good. So that's going to be the shita of Rabbi Yossi.
Rabbi Yehuda.
I'm sorry. What's going on here? I'm getting distracted here. Okay, fine. So that's going to be the shita of Rabbi Yehuda. And why is Rav Yehuda very logical? His logic is compelling. Because again, as we said, she may have been pregnant at the time of the Gerus. Rav Yossi is going to assume she's not pregnant at the time of the Gerus. We know that for sure. And therefore she can get married immediately.
What's the basis of that assumption?
Oh. So that's what the Gemara wants to understand. How does Rav Yossi know? Why does he draw the conclusion that she's not pregnant? So the Gemara establishes here on Daf Lamed Zayin that a girl who's about to convert already anticipates her gerus. In modern times, we would say that she already has an appointment at the Beis Din. Right? She has Azmada LeBezdin for her gerus on a certain date. So she's now not Jewish, but she knows that she's going to convert at a certain moment of time. That's when she's going to show up in Beis Din. So Rav Yossi says that she takes precaution to make sure that she doesn't get pregnant so that she can get married after the gerus, knowing full well that the father of this child will be the Jewish man who marries her after the gerus. What precautions does she take? So this is called moch. And in the worst case scenario that she does have some sort of an intimate relationship before the gerus, she'll make sure that she doesn't get pregnant by inserting a moch into her body. But the only problem with this is that Rabbi Yossi, in guaranteeing that she took precautions and contraception to make sure she didn't get pregnant before the gerus, that's not going to apply in the case of Shivcha. Rabbi Yossi says this even in the case of Shivcha. Now, Shivcha subdivides into two categories. One category is what's called Get Shichur, which means that her master gave her Get Shichur. She can anticipate that her master gave her a Get Shichur, and therefore if she had any intimate relations, Rabbi Yossi would again apply the principle that she takes precaution by putting in a moch. But there's another category of Shivcha, which is called Yotzeis B'Shein V'Yayin. There was no way that she could anticipate that scenario. So how would we know in that case that she's not pregnant? And presumably Rabbi Yossi made a flat, unqualified statement that in all cases of a Shivcha, she can get married immediately after she goes free. With the freedom, she becomes a full-fledged Gioris and she can get married. Wait a minute, did she anticipate that he would knock out an eye or a tooth? And the Gemara answers that Rabbi Yossi is going to rely on a different kind of contraception, which is post-coitus, which means that after she has this intimate relationship, she wipes herself off, and she turns herself over, and she jerks her body in such a way that she regurgitates all the semen, all the seven that's in her body, and she won't get pregnant. And the Gemara assumes that Rabbi Yehuda would not rely on such a thing. Rabbi Yehuda is not going to rely on what's called Isha Mizana Mesapechas Umizana. And that's going to be a valid method of contraception. So therefore, Rabbi Yehuda is going to apply the requirement of Hamtana in all these cases. By the way, the Gemara wants to know, what about the case of a Shvuya? And it would seem, based on our Mishnah here, that Rabbi Yehuda assumes that a Shvuya is Bechezkas Kiddushasa, meaning that she's still a Besula, and therefore a Shvuya would be allowed to eat Truma if she's a Bas Kohen. A Shvuya would have rights to collect the Knas as onus of Mafata B'Toras Besula. She would get a Ksuvas Masayim as a Besula. But yet, Rabbi Yehuda requires Hamtana in the case of a Shvuya. Again, he doesn't mention Shvuya explicitly, but he assumes that a woman, in the case of a Gioris, despite the fact that she anticipates her Gioris, nevertheless she's living in a non-Jewish society, and in that milieu she's going to have some sort of wanton intimate relationship, and Rabbi Yud is not going to rely on any method of contraception, etc., etc. So therefore, there's a requirement to Hatan. And then Kal v'chomer, the Gemara thinks, in the case of a Shmuya, where not only is she surrounded by non-Jews, but she's captive, and it's very difficult for her to control what's going to happen in intimate relationships. So how do we reconcile the two statements of Rabbi Yehuda? On the one hand, Rabbi Yehuda holds in our Mishnah that a Shvuya is Bekdushasa, that she still has a Cheskes Psua. On the other hand, in the case of a Gioress, Rabbi Yehuda requires Hamtana, which presumably means that when she's in the atmosphere and surrounded by non-Jews, then we have to worry about a Be'ilah. So that should certainly apply in the case of a Shvuya. And the Gemara answers, Gioress HaShvuya Karamis, Gioress Lo Mantara Nafsha, Shvuya Mintara Nafsha. That Rabbi Yehuda Shita is that a Gioress cannot take proper precautions, and she might in fact get pregnant. But in the case of a Shvuya, she realizes that, or shall we say, she's hopeful that she will re-enter the Jewish community, and she therefore wants to retain her status as a Besula. And Rav Yehuda actually believes with faith that and optimism that she can somehow protect herself from any from being victimized, and therefore she still has a Cheskas Besula. All right. That's what I wanted to review with you from the previous sugya. Now we go back to our Mishnah. The Mishnah says that if a person, let's say Baal Bito, for example, is mischayv benafsho, he doesn't pay the knas of onus u'mefata, shenemar, because we derive from the pasuk v'lo yason anosh yeyonesh, which means that if the pregnant woman survives the blow, then and only then does the makeh, the nogef, pay the knas, implying, however, that if she had died, then he would be exempt from the knas. So the Gemara wants to know, v'homehocha nafka, is it, in fact, this is the source for kim lev in the ramine? We don't need the pasuk, v'lo yason anosh yeyonesh, mehasam nafka. Let's derive it from a different pasuk. And that pasuk says, "V'pilo ashofet v'kol lefanav." I'm reading the whole pasuk. "Kidei rish aso." Now that pasuk, which is in the 25th chapter of Devarim, that pasuk indicates that we can only give her one. Only give him one punishment, kidei rish aso. And the word rish aso means his rishus, his singular criminal action. Mishum rish achas tamachayv yitar machayv mishum shtei rish aso. We now punish him with two punishments simultaneously. So therefore, if a person was chayv misa and chayv mamon, then for sure we would not be able to impose a chiv mama in such a case. So why do we need the pasuk v'lo yason anosh yeyonesh? We could have derived it from the pasuk kidei rish aso. So the answer is we need both pasukim, chada b'miso maman v'chada b'malkos maman. Now notice what goes on over here. In the case of lo yason, we're talking about misa, because if she in fact died, then he's culpable as a rotzeach, and he's chayv misa. And the Torah is telling me that the chayv misa knocks off the chayv mama. In the case of someone who violates a chayv malchus, we'll see this, for example, in cases like Edim Zomimim, where he violates Lo Sana Brachei Tshaka, and at the same time, he's chayv mama under the law of Kasha Zomam. Or for that matter, let's say a person who was eating truma and he got asra for malchus, and then at the same time he ripped somebody else's shirayim. So that would be malchus umama. Now you and I might say the following, that maybe in the case of malchus umama, you know, we can go easy on him and we can say he doesn't get two punishments because he only violated a chiyuv lav. But in the case of misa, here we should hit him with the kitchen sink. We should be very, very harsh on him and mete out both punishments. Or you could go the other way around. We could say, well, maybe in the case of misa, you know, dai b'kach, that he's getting killed. You know, he's going to be put to death. We don't have to impose another chiyuv mamon. But in the case of malchus, where we're only giving him malchus, we should also hit him with a chiyuv mamon. So the Gemara says tzricha, we need both psukim. De iash me'inon misa umamon. If I only had the pasuk by the isha, by lo yason, is mishum de ika ibud neshama. Maybe what the Torah is saying is that we're being so machmer that we're taking his life, we're going to alleviate him of his chiyuv mam. Aval, but in the case of malchus and mamon, deleka ibud neshama, obviously the level of punishment is much lower and less severe than misa. It's only malchus. In such a case, aimalo, perhaps we're not going to exempt him from a chiyuv mam. We can only exempt him from a chiyuv mam when he has the apex of punishments, the most intense punishment, which is misa. So we need the pasuk kidei rishaso to extend the principle of kimlev the rabbine even to a case of malchus, because we would have thought in the case of malchus we would be more machmir, and we would say since he's not getting the worst of all punishments, we should also make him pay the mamon. The iashminan malchus umamon. But let's say we only had the pasuk kidei rishaso, which is in the parish of malchus. And the Torah says that in such a case he didn't violate such a terrible avera. He didn't violate a capital crime. Is mishum de lo chomer isure? Then the Torah let him off the hook, and we said, you know, Bezdin only imposed one punishment, not two. Aval miso mama de chomer isura, when he violates a capital crime, is aim alone. Maybe we should, as we said before, we should be very harsh with him, and in addition to chiv misa, we should impose a chiyuv mamon, and therefore tzricha, we need the pasuk lo yason anoshi anesh to apply that even in the case where he violates the most severe of all prohibitions, and that's called chomer isur b'misa, even in such a case we have a certain element of compassion on him and we alleviate him from the chiyuv mamon. So we need both. We need malchus umamon to tell you that even though he violates a lesser prohibition, nevertheless he's still potter from mamon. And we need also the case of misa mamon, even though with his ibud neshama we're taking away his nefesh, we still might have thought that maybe he should pay. Kamashmal, no, he doesn't pay. Fekti Gemara ulam Rabbi Meir Loki Mishalim. Rabbi Meir diomar Loki Mishalim. Rabbi Meir says that if two eidim testify against someone that he's chai of 200 zuz, and then they turn out to be Edom Zomimim, they have a double punishment. On the one hand, they get Malchus for violating Losan Breachet Shakar for perjury, and at the same time, they have to pay the Masayim Zuz under the law of Kasha Zoma. Is Tarti Lomali. In other words, Rabbeir only accepts the principle of Kim Levi the Rabmine in a case of Chiyuv Misa, Velo Yason, Anoshi Anesh. He's not going to extend it to the case of Malchus, because in Malchus he maintains that Loke Mishalim. So then it certainly should be sufficient to have one drush, one Yalfus of Lo Yason. Why do we need the second drush of Kidei Rishason? And the Gemara answers that even according to Rabbi Meir, we have two different halachas within the context of Misa of Kimlei ben Rabmini. Chada v'misa umamon, and here we're turning to the Aflam and Zayin on the Beis, v'chada v'misa umalkos. We're going to need two psukim. One pasuk, which is v'lo yason for Misa umamon, that Misa knocks off the chiv mamon. And we need another pasuk, that Misa knocks off a chiv malkos utzricha. Why do we need both cases? So let's just take a moment and think about this. Number one, we have a certain affinity, so to speak, between Misa and Malchus. They are both corporeal punishments. And that might lead me to the conclusion that although Misa, which is radically different than Mamon, could knock off the Chiyuv Mamon, I don't know necessarily that if you have two punishments of the same ilk, of the same kind, that one would knock off the other. If you have two punishments of the same kind, they're both corporeal, they're both categorically physical to his body, then we can assume that this is a process in which we start punishing him corporeally with Malchus, and then we culminate with Misa. Utsricha, di'i ashmina Misa, u'mama, mishum, dechadab, gufei, dechadab, mamone. is Lav Dina. We don't apply two punishments if they're radically different, one from the other. We cannot integrate them into one long punishment. You know, one punishment is on the body and the other punishment is on the bank account. Aval Miso Malkus, they're both corporeal punishments. Idi Gufe is Ema Misa Richtahi Vinavid Bey. Maybe we could apply two punishments because they're really one. We integrate them into a process which begins with Malkus and culminates with Misa. So therefore, I need a pasuk of Aloya Sum. I need a pasuk of Kedei Rishaso for a case of Miso Malkus. Okay, but let's go the other way around. Why do I need a pasuk for Miso Mamon if in Misa and Malkus, which are both two punishments of the same ilk that could theoretically be integrated into one, nevertheless the Torah says don't give him two punishments, just meet out one, and how much more so in the case of Miso Mamon? Yashmina Miso Malkus, the Tarte Begufe, Lo Avdinon. Maybe it's a too much of a punishment to his body, you know, to start by giving him 39 lashes and then culminate by taking his life. That we're not going to do. Aval Misu Mamon, the Chad Begufe, the Chad Mamone. We can apply these two punishments. You know, it's not so severe, you know. One is coming from his bank account, is Ema Navid Bey. You know, we discussed many times, like in the case of Karashi Raim Shel Chavero that we had earlier in this perek, that why should the Nizak lose out for his mamon? You know, you owe him mamon for damaging his property. He's getting Misa. Okay, that's his punishment of Misa. But as far as mamon is concerned, why should we exempt him from mamon? And perhaps we can go even a step further and apply this even to the case of Knas. You remember we had a long discussion about Chiddush She'ush, Chiddush HaTorah B'Knas, that maybe in the case of Knas, for example, in order to Mefatach HaMishum Kes, we suspend the principle of Kim Leib B'Rav Midei, because the Torah wants this double punishment. Yeah, but the Gemara is saying now that since we have a special Yalfusa that's teaching me that even in the case of Misu Mamon, which is Chad B'Gufei B'Chad B'Momnei, we're going to still apply the principle of Kim Leib B'Rav Midei, and we're going to say that Knas is also a kind of a punishment. He doesn't have to pay that Knas because we're giving him a capital punishment. Tzricha, so we need two psukim. Now, Rabose, at this point, we're going to go even a step further. We're going to introduce, I wouldn't call it a brand new sugya, because to some extent it's a continuation of the sugya that we've been learning about the pasuk V'lo Yason Anoshi Anesh. But what we're going to do is we're going to take a look at an entire parsha in the 35th chapter of the book of Bamidbar, and we're going to see three different psukim that are written in the same context in Bamidbar Lamed Hey. We're going to look at pasuk Lamed Aleph, then we're going to look at pasuk Lamed Beis, then we're going to look at pasuk Lamed Gimel. We're going to see a unit here of three psukim, and we're going to try to figure out what those psukim are going to teach us. Each one needs a certain chiddush. After we finish with that unit of three psukim, we're going to fast forward to Dvarim Chaf Aleph, and we're going to see a pasuk there which seems to teach us again the same chiddush. But in the Havamina, the Gemara thinks that the entire unit here in Bamidbar Lamed Hey addresses the issue of Kim Leib B'Rav Midei. The Gemara is very quickly going to drop that like a hot potato. But the Gemara asks the following. Then the first of these three psukim, which is in Pasuk Lamed Aleph, reads the following. V'lo sikhu kofer l'nefesh rotzeach asher hu rasholamus kimos yumas. And the Gemara assumes that this pasuk is addressing the principle of Kim Leib B'Rav Midei, which means the following. So let's just read the Gemara. Lomalu, why do we need this pasuk? For the Omer Achmana lo sishko mamonu minei v'tiftere miktol. You might think that since there are two punishments and we cannot apply both punishments, maybe in this case, this Tahavamina for which the Pasuk of Chadish Lafuke, we should let him off easy, let him pay let's say the Dmei HaNirtzach, whatever value of money we can evaluate the Nirtzach, the one who was killed, and therefore he should be exempt from Misa. So it means that in this, shall I say, tug of war between two punishments, number one, Misa, number two, paying Dmei HaNirtzach, which is a Tashlumei Mamon, we should choose Tashlumei Mamon. And comes along the Torah and says, no, Kimos, you must. He's going to get killed and he won't pay the Mamon. Well, we already know that. Why? Because the Torah implies that if the Nogev kills the Isha Hara, the Torah says, then in such a case he gets Misa, and he's exempt from paying the Mamon, the Dmei Vlados. The Torah says, V'loyasson, only if she survives, then Anoshianesh, then he pays the Mamon. But if she dies, and he have Yerachi of Misa, he's also responsible for the death of the Vlados, and he should be paying the Dmei Vlados. No, he doesn't pay the Dmei Vlados, because the Torah is saying only if lo yason anosh yonish, but if yason, lo ye onish. That's the implication. So again, now in this overlap between Misa and Mamon, it's crystal clear that he gets Misa, and he's vindicated from the Chiyuv Mamon. So why do I need a pasuk to tell me v'lo siku kofel nefesh rotzeach? So where it says, no, you're off base over here. This pasuk has nothing to do with Kim Lev Ravamine. This pasuk is introducing a brand new principle, which is called kofer. And it's excluding kofer. It's coming lafuke kofer. What's kofer? Kofer says, you know what? Listen, before you put me to death, I got a better deal for you. I'm willing to give you a very hefty donation as redemption. That's called kofer. Comes on the Torah, it says, Lo siklu kofel nefesh tzekimos yimas. Amrachmona, lo sikto mamonamine. Don't tishkol mamonamine. Don't take money from him as a redemption. V'tiftere miktola. And therefore, you would exempt him from Misa. No. The Torah says, we don't accept pidyon with regard to a rotzeach. We're talking about someone who is a rotzeach, and mos yimas, he will be put to death. So this begins a whole new sugya. As I said before, the whole sugya is coming to figure out how many sugyim do we need to teach me this very same principle over and over again, that we don't accept redemption money to exempt a rotzeach from the death penalty. So the Gemara asks, let's look at the next pasuk, right? So we started with pasuk lamed aleph. Look at the very next pasuk. The very next pasuk says, "Lo sikhu kofer lanus el ir miklato l'shuv l'sheves baris ad mos hakohen." So again, the Torah is telling us, don't take kofer from someone who killed, who murdered. Except in this case, the murder was what? What does it mean, lanus el ir miklato? What kind of murder are we talking about?
Oh, b'shogeg.
Okay, good. Lovel. So the Gemara answers, I need two psukim, one for a mezid and one for a shogig. We would not have known that in the lesser violation of ritzicha, a lowercase ritzicha, which is an unintentional ritzicha, where the chiyuv is to go into golus, that's a whole different story. Maybe in such a case, you know, it's worth it for Besen to work out some sort of a deal here where he'll pay an enormous sum of money and he doesn't have to go to Golos. So the Gemara says, trade coin, loving chad, the shogi chad, the mezid, the tzrichi. The iash me'inon mezid, mishum de chomeri sure. This man is guilty of a deliberate murder, the worst violation of the Torah, and now we're not going to let him patter himself up by taking tashlumei mamon and accepting a kofar. Avol shogei de lo chomer isure. After all, he was negligent, but he didn't institute a deliberate murder. Is therefore maybe we could be a little bit more lenient with him and accept a nice fat check? You know, we could really help the disadvantaged children or the cancer patients. You know, with the research for fetal intervention. That's going to be my subject of my lecture today in the OU. Fetal intervention. Okay. The iash meaning shogeg. If we only had the case of golus, you know what? Mishum Deleka Ibn Neshama, the Torah is being very harsh with him in sending him to Golis, and the Torah objects and prohibits taking any sort of redemption. That's because he's not going to lose his life. He'll live a very comfortable life in the Amikla. But maybe to save, you know, it's bad enough that someone died already as a result of this murder. But now to kill the murderer, maybe we should be soft about it, soft-hearted, and we should accept a redemption. It's very, very strange. But the Gemara thinks that maybe there's a possibility within the context of Ibn Neshama to accept the kofar. Therefore, I need both psukim. So that covers us for two out of the three psukim in this unit in Bamidbar Perek Lamed Hey. Now we get to the third, and I'll read to you the whole pasuk. The pasuk says, "Velo sachnifu es haaretz asher atem ba ki adam hu yachnif es haaretz." Once again, we're talking about a case of shvichas dama, murder case. Ulaaretz lo yechupar la dam asher shufach ba ki im bedam shofcho. Now, the words lo yechupar, the Gemara thinks, imply that we should not take a kapara. Lo yechupar is a conjugated verb of the noun kapara. Kapara means some sort of redemption money. So he's chayav misa, he's a rotzeach. And the Torah is telling us that aretz lo yechupar, there's no kapara here by taking money. Is lovely. Why do I need this? We already had the pasul of sikhu kofel and nefesh rotzeach. So Gemara answers, this is a whole nother story. This pasuk actually appears, although it's the third pasuk in this unit, in a broader context of what's called Egla Rufa. So we find a slain body between two cities, and we know that there was a murder case here. We cannot find at this point the murderer. We haven't located the murderer. And we go through this entire ritual of Egla Arufa. And what the Torah wants to do now in this pasuk is create a hekesh between the Egla that's subject to Arifa and the Rotzeach who's subject to Misa Sayef. Right? There are two cases in the Torah where the Torah says you put a person to death with Misa Sayef, by beheading him. And that's the case of Rotzeach and the case of what's called Ir HaNidachas. And this is the Sugyan Sanhedrin I involve him in Paris. Now the question is, how exactly do we implement Misa Sayef? And we're going to derive a conclusion, a major conclusion from Egla Rufa. But don't take this too seriously, my friends. Because if you're going to take this too seriously, you're going to come to some really major mistaken conclusions about how far we're going to go with this equation between the Sayef of the Egla Rufa, when this Egla is put to death, and the Misa Sayef in the case of a Rotzeach. Minayin she'im nis'arfa Egla v'yakach nimsa horig up. Okay, I jumped the gun a little bit. So let's talk about the word Yechupar first, and then we'll get to the next part of the pasuk, which is Ve'ata Tevar Hadam. Okay, that's actually I'm fast forwarding to Dvarim. So let's in Dvarim we're going to have a hekesh to Egla Rufa in terms of how to implement the Misa Sayef. So let's hold off with Dvarim. Let's get back to Bamidbar. So in Bamidbar, we want to know the following. Could there be a possibility of letting the Rotzeach off the hook, or off the Sayef, I guess we should say in this case, right? And exempting him from Misa. Well, what's a Havamina? What wild idea would I have? We've already accepted from two different psukim that the Rotzeach cannot redeem himself with money. Oh, but maybe there's another type of kapara, which is not a monetary kapara, but is a ritual kapara, so to speak. A maisa mechaper. What's the case? The Egla Rufa that's put to death in this ritual is meant to be mechaper. It's a kapar. Now, who needs kapar? So your knee-jerk response would be that the rotzach needs kapar, right? He's running around amok. He's somewhere free, unshackled. We haven't reined him in yet. Hopefully we'll find witnesses and we'll be able to, you know, want to dead or alive, we'll be able to identify the rotzach. But in the meantime, we haven't identified him. We go through this entire process of kapara through egla rufa, and we kill the egla. So what's that a kapara for? So you and I might say that it's a kapara for the rotzach himself. Minafkimina, let's say we locate the rotzach, and he's already achieved his kapara through the process of egla rufa. That's a havamina. And the other possibility is to say, no, this is the egla rufa is a kapara, but it's not for the rotzach. He's guilty as accused. If we find him, we'll put him to death. But rather, it's a kapar for the ziknei ha'ir, because if you remember in the ritual of egla rufa, the zkenim have to come down and make a statement. They have to proclaim that yodenu lo shofkas adom azes. The Gemara in Sotah asks, what was the havamina that the zkenim, the elders of the city, were guilty for spilling blood? Did anybody remember the Gemara's answer?
We thought maybe they didn't provide him either with livui or food or whatever.
Excellent. They didn't send him. Send this a sojourner came into the town. You know, he's a new face in town. And when he left the town, we should have provided him with the food that he needed. As a result, he was desperate and he got involved in a kind of situation which ultimately led to his own death, and he was murdered. So the Zkeda might need a kapara here. So Minayim is Shadisraf in this Arfa Egla after the Arifa. Then Achkach Nimtza Horig, we find, we locate the Rotzach Minayim Shein Pochuno. So how do we know that this kapara process of the Egla Arufa is not a kapara for the Rotzach, and therefore we shouldn't put him to death? And the answer is Shenemar V'lo Arts Lo Yechupar L'Adom Asher Shufach Bo. In other words, whatever kapar there is here in the process of Egla Ruf, it's not al adam asher shufach bo, it's not related to the shofek domim, he himself will be put to death.
Although, if they're not certain who he is, it seems unlikely that they would ever have witnesses who gave warning. And
I guess if time does its own, you know, I don't know if you remember when maybe you weren't old enough to remember Sherlock Holmes movies. You know, sometimes it took Sherlock Holmes like years and years until he finally solved the case. You know?
But he had to have witnesses who also gave us rub, not just...
Right. Right, so I'm just saying, if at the end of the day we do find, you know, and fulfill all the conditions, right, we will put him to death, he doesn't have a right to say this. We'll say, well, you already killed the egg law in that ritual, then you have a kapara, I'm free. So Kamashmon says, it's lo yuchupar, don, we'll put this rotzeh to death. Now we're fast forwarding.
But by the way, it could be they reported this, but in the meantime, it took them a while to find the guy.
Right, right. Maybe there were Aedim, but we can't find the guy. A million and one possibilities. It may take.
Although, would they do the Egla Rufa if they knew who the person was? They already knew who it was, and now they just need to find him. Or I thought they only did it if they didn't know what the cause was or who did it.
I'm not sure. I don't know. I'd have to learn Masechta Sotah. But let's go on. I'm on a roll here. Right. So now let's fast forward. So we have a pasuk in Dvarim Chaf Aleph now, and the pasuk reads the following: Yata Tevayr Adom Anoki Adom Anoki Mikirbucha Ki Tasa Yoshebein Hashem Lamali. So again, it sounds like we're repeating what we already know, that we have to put the murderer to death, and this pasuk is at the very end of the parsha of Egla Rufa. So the Gemara says that pasuk is miboilei lechinisanya for a brisa minayin lemumasim v'saif shuminat savar. How do we know that when we put a person to death by beheading him, we cut him in the neck, the tzavar? Again, there are two possibilities. Minat tzavar means from the outside of the tzavar, which is called the oref, or from the garon, the throat on the inside. So we know it's minat garon. The Gemara is going to clarify that in just a moment. But how do we know that's where we do it? Talmud Lomar Atot Tavar Adam Anoki Mikir Becha, which means that we have, in the parsha of Egla Rufa, we have a hekesh between a deliberate rotzeach and the Egla Rufa itself. Right, so to be mevayer the dama noki, what we do is we put the egla rufa to death by beheading the egla. That's the ritual. And we have a hukshu kol shofchei dam legla rufa, because the Torah says tevayer adam noki mikirbecha, which is a reference to other murder cases. And what do we derive from this hekishli? Malahalan binatzavar is af shofchei damim minatzavar. So a murderer has to be put to death in the same way the negla roof is put to death, with sayif, and it's got to be minatzavar. So the Gemara says, how far are you going to take it? This hekish. Imalahalan bekofitz umibul oref. You know, this butcher's knife, you know, and you just chop off the head from the back. That's called mina oref. It's afkan bekofitz umibula oref, and that would be a really repulsive, very, very disgusting kind of misa. You know, it's a clean cut in the front. I mean, I guess he cut the two simonim, and that's it. The man dies. It's not pleasant, but mina kofit, the kofitz mina mula oref. That's really rough. This is a very famous Gemara, all the ethicists that study Jewish law, they quote this Gemara, that you have to love your friend even when you're putting him to death. Even that's included in the Avtal Rechemov. He's a Rasha, he's Chayav Mises Bezdin, he's the worst criminal of them all, he's a murderer. And nevertheless, we have to limit the kind of suffering that he experiences when we put him to death. And therefore, we kill him b'sayif, but we kill him in atzavar. And he's going to die immediately. And it's not a repulsive kind of death where we mutilate his body.
Wait, so tzavar means the entire neck,
right? Which includes the back and the front.
I see. Okay, got it.
And the question is, which? So, if we take the hekish to its logical conclusion, it's going to be from the back. So Gemara says we have to l'recha kamocha. So again, if not for the Hekesh, as far as Chiyuv Mises Bezdin is concerned, to Egla Rufa, we would not know exactly where to cut him with the sakin. So for that, we need the Tzavar. We need to identify the Tzavar through Egla Rufa. But it's a fact, whether it's Mi'achore Atzavar or Mi'lifnim, that we have the Pasuk V'Ahavta L'Rech Kamoch. Okay, now we introduce another parasha. And this parasha is in Kiddushim, I'm sorry, is in Mishpatim. Where is this? Kol Cherem. This is in at the end of Vayikra.
Chukotai.
Kol Cherem asher yechram in adam lo yifte mos yumas. So we're talking about a cherem, or in the plural, charamim, lo yachram min adam lo yifte mos yumas. So we're talking about Chayve Mises Bezdin, and the Torah is telling us Lo Yipadeh. Lo Yipadeh means we cannot accept a ransom money for someone who's condemned to death. Now, where does it say anything about death in this pasuk? So there are two things. First of all, it says Yecharam, and the word Cherem indicates death. That's based on a pasuk in Shmos Chav Beis. It says Soveach Lelokim Yecharam, and secondly, it says Mos Yumas, that we put him to death. Lo Yifta. So lowly. Well, again, why are you repeating the same story? That we don't accept ransom money for someone who's condemned to death. We have the pasuk of Sikhu Kofel and Efesh Hotzeah. So Moshe says Miboyle Lechasanya. This is a sugya in Masechta Erchin. Okay, so a person turns to someone else. Let's say Reuven turns to Shimon and he says, Erko shall Shimon alai, meaning I will pay Hegdesh a set amount of money that reflects Ploni. Ploni means that other person, depending upon his gender, his age. And Minayin Liyotse Liharik, what happens if Shimon is going to be put to death? The Omar Echon, and comes along Reuven, he says, Erko shall Shimon alai. Now, what's his value? It's very strange to give a value to a person who's just about to be killed. Minayin shalom Omar Klum. we need a pasuk to teach me that we don't look at this person out of context and say, well, he's a healthy person, he's a male, and he's 45 years old, he's very strong, he has a full life of work ahead of him. No, we look at him in his context. And in this context, he's about to be put to death. He's Yotzei Liyari. And how do we know this? Shenemar, we derive from this pasuk called Cherem, Asher Yacharam Min Adam Lo Yipadeh Mos Yumos. So in other words, the word Yacharam now is being interpreted as Hegdesh, and the Torah is coming to tell you that if a person says Erkos Shaploni Olai, and that person is a Yotzei Liyari, then Lo Yipadeh. Lo Yipadeh means he has no value, and therefore the statement, the haflas peh, which means the neder of erko olai in this case, does not generate any sort of a chiyuv. So the normal price which the Torah sets for a person does not apply to someone who's a yotzei lihoreg, and therefore this erko olai is completely invalid. Now here the Braisa quotes a very strange havamina. I'm just going to read it. I don't really understand it. Yochal af kodim shenigmar dino kein. The man said Erko Shalploni Olai when the man was being accused of a death penalty crime. The Beis Din hasn't yet issued any sort of a verdict, and there's some sort of a havamina here that the Erko Shalploni Olai works l'mafreya in such a way that since the din is already in process, the judgment is already in process, we only have to wait till the final decision is handed down, and then retroactively we understand that he was a mechuyev misa. And therefore, in such a case, I might think that Erko Shalploni Olai, and then later on, after he took that vow, Ploni was condemned to death with a final verdict by Beis Din, maybe in such a case he has no value. And it's also included in the pasuk of Lo Yipadeh, Talmud Lomar, but the pasuk says, Kol Cherem Asher Yecha Min HaAdam V'lo Kol Adam. The Torah went out of its way to limit this, Min HaAdam. So when it says Lo Yipadeh, it's only Min HaAdam, which teaches you that it's not always the case that the Ercho Shalploni Olai does not register. It sometimes it doesn't register, sometimes it does. So to figure out some sort of logical conclusion here, we'll say it depends whether it was before Gmar Din or after Gmar Din. Now I don't think there would be a havamina that if you said Ercho Shalploni before that person committed the crime, that there would be a havamina to say you don't have to pay Ercho Olai. But once he committed the crime, now the Gemara thinks that Gemara Din is only a birur. It's only to clarify that he was guilty of that criminal act. Now the Gemara asks the following question: Rabbi Chananya ben Akiva, all this understanding of erchin and the Torah's kiddush here that there's no chi of erchin in a case of a yotzei lihoreg, that makes sense according to the Chacham, but according to Rabbi Chananya ben Akavya di Omar, because in Masech Erchin he's quoted as saying Nerach, that Enochinami Ruvein will have to pay and fulfill his vow of Erchin, even though he's talking about Shimon who's a yotzei lihoreg, Mipnei Shedomav Ktsuvim. The Torah says, "Domav Ktsum." The Torah says that there are certain objective evaluations for each person in the parasha of Erchin, and therefore, if a person says "Domav Olai," what he's basically saying is not that I am in any way paying his value, but rather that his value is just a siman l'dov. It's only a way of clarifying and establishing what I accepted upon myself. Again, you take a look at the pasuk and it says Kol Cherem, and then it says Lo Yipadeh. The question is going to be how Rabbi Chananya would interpret the pasuk Kol Cherem. What does that mean? Because now you're telling me that even though he's a Yotzei Lihoreg, nevertheless he's included in the parasha of Erechin. So what does it mean, kol cherem lo yipade? So I have a footnote here which I'm going to read to you. It's a one-liner here in the name of the Rashba. The Rashba says that kol cherem, you might think that kol cherem yimayit is coming to exclude Misha Omar Dmei Ploni Olaiv Hu Yotze Lihoreg Mishum Shedover Poshu She'en Lo Domen V'en Tzarech L'Posuk L'Kach. For some reason, the Rashba raises a Hava Mina here, which he rejects, that maybe according to Rav Chananya, you don't need this Posuk at all to exclude Cherem. So the Gemara goes out of its way to say no, that it's not a Dover Poshut that he doesn't pay the Erech in this case. He pays the Erech in the Erech. Why? Because of the Halach of Dom of Ketsuvim. So now we're stuck, because what do we do with the Pasuk Kol Cherem Lo Yipode? Is High Kol Cherem I Ovid Lemi Boile Chesanya? We need it for a Brisa of Rabbi Yishmael Benosha, Rabbi Yochanan Ben Brok Omer, Lefisha Matzinu, Limu Mosim Bidei Shamayim. The case is a sharamuah that kills a person, the Torah says, v'gamba all of yumas, which means that the Torah is in Shamayim they're going to mete out the punishment that he deserves for not watching his shor properly. It's a sharamuah, and as a result somebody died. Is shenosne mamonu miskaper lehem, that even though the Torah says gamba all of yumas, even in Shamayim, he can redeem himself down on earth, so to speak, by paying a tashlum for the dead person. Again, he pays it to the Yorashim Shenemar. So I'm going to read the entire Pasuk in Mishpatim. It says, V'yimshar nagach hu mitmol shel shom v'huad v'bol v'lo yishmer v'yimis ish o isha hashar yisakel v'gam ba'ol of yumas. But then the Torah says, im kofar yushas olav. It means that the Baal Ashor can actually redeem himself from the Chiyuv Misa B'dei Shamayim by paying the value of the Nerag to the Yorshim. Oh, so now that's a case where he's Chiyuv Misa B'dei Shamayim. So we already have some sort of a precedent for redemption of someone who's really Chayav Misa, albeit to B'dei Shamayim. Is Yochanan might extend this Af B'dei Odom Kein? And here's where Rav Chananya is going to have an answer to the question what he does with the Pasuk Kol Cherem Asher Yechra Min Odom Lo Yipodeh. Is Yochal Af, I might think, even in the case of Misa B'dei Odom Kein, we can extend it a little bit further. Yeah, but the only question is going to be, what about the Poskel Osikhu Kofel L'Nefesh Rotzeach? So that the Gemara is going to raise this objection. But right now the Gemara doesn't know about that Poskel. So Gemara wants to justify the Poskel of Lo Yipodeh to tell you that even though in the case of Shar Shehemis, you can redeem yourself from the Chiyuv Misa, that's B'dei Shamayim. But in a Misa B'dei Adam, there's no Pidyon. The only element of Mises Chamura Shalom Nitnu Shigigoslan Kapara Mises Kal Shinitnu Shigoslan Kapara Minayin. Alright, so this we'll have to take up tomorrow. So Mirza Hashem, tomorrow we'll start from this Brisa of Rabbi Shmuel. We'll review it a little bit and then we'll be able to move forward. We're almost at the end of this Sugya, and then we start a major, major new Sugya of Rami Bar Chama, and that we'll do in Mirza Hashem tomorrow. Can I borrow this pencil for just a second?